And more what-ifs. What if her purse hadn't been stolen? What if it hadn't been so late in the day? The SUV hit several dips and potholes, and I grabbed the oh-shit handle again. Okay, Jax, the area where we think the Jeep crashed is just up here, off a cliff that's about 600 feet high, he says, letting his words settle in. I look through his window to the edge of the road, where the only thing separating us from the ocean below is a thick wall of tropical plants and flowers. I look behind me to gauge how steep this cliff is and grab the edge of the seat. It's high. There's no place to pull over, so I'm going to have to use my car to stop traffic both ways. There shouldn't be many vehicles on the road, but you'll still need to be quick. Are you sure you can do that? You came all the way out here to see this. It's the least I can do, he says, parking the car diagonally and turning on the red and blue flashing lights. Okay, I say, feeling my heart collapse into itself as I open my door and look over my shoulder in case any cars are coming up behind us, still thinking about that truck that came barreling around the corner. I suddenly have trouble catching my breath, as if I've been running from something. But I haven't, I remind myself. I will finally be running towards something. Denial will have no place once I look over that edge. Beth places a hand on my shoulder. I'm right here, okay? It begins to rain again. As we start to make our way to the edge, Officer Kealoha stops us. I just want to prepare you. It's a long way down. The lava rocks down there are sharp. He trails off. You can talk to me about this like you would anyone else. Please finish what you were going to say. Officer Kealoha gives me a long look before continuing. Okay. The Jeep exploded and caught fire when it hit the rocks below. We found pieces of it scattered in the ocean in the bay we just passed. Some washed ashore. That's also where Dylan's body was found about 2 weeks after the wreck. I find Beth's hand and grasp it, but refuse to look her way. I can hear her crying softly, and I want to stay strong. I let myself go to that place. That awful, ugly place where I imagine James's final moments. The shock, then fear, and then searing pain. And the realization he was going to die. What did he think of in his last moments? Me? Dylan? And if he knew about the pregnancy, was he thinking about their unborn baby? I slide my wedding ring off my left finger and kiss it. Then say a silent prayer that his death was quick and painless. And then, even though I really don't want to, I say one for Dylan too before tossing my band into the ocean, watching intently until it disappears, imagining it cracking the surface of the water. Chapter 32. Dylan. Before. Dylan would never forget the moment she and James kissed for the first time. How, when it had finally happened, she realized she'd wanted it since the day they'd met. When James had waited for her after her shift, pressing a $20 bill and his business card into her petite hand. She could have thrown away that contact information and had no way to find him. But she hadn't. Instead, she'd stared at it all night, turning it over in her hand, tracing the edges, wondering what his backstory was, how he'd gotten into software sales. Finally, she'd buried the card at the bottom of her underwear drawer, debating whether to reach out. 3 days later, she was pulling out a pair of her favorite white lace panties when his card had dropped to the floor. She'd taken it as a sign that it was time to at least say thank you for his generous tip, and that would be the end of it. Because she had Nick. He was a good man, one she'd just gotten engaged to, and it was dangerous to toy with this idea that she hadn't actually found her future in the man she'd promised it to just days before. James had responded within minutes, and Dylan had felt her heart flutter, her stomach tingle. They only dipped their big toes in at first, offering each other small scraps of their life through a daily email exchange. Maybe he'd send a funny meme of the latest political debate, or she'd share a story from work. Like when the executive chef got into a fistfight with the general manager over the very young and long-legged hostess they'd both been seeing. But Dylan quickly found she wanted more. More than the challenge to write a witty email. More than the giddy excitement she felt as she opened his. More than the surface flirtation they'd been dancing around. She'd been staring blankly at the latest episode of New Girl when she got the courage to ask him about the one thing they weren't talking about. His marriage. Almost 24 hours went by before she heard back. So long that she'd convinced herself she had scared him away. But then she'd heard the ding of her incoming email and saw his name. He told her he'd been married for 8 years, and her name was Jacqueline. That things used to be good, but she had changed, he said, and he traveled a lot. And both the physical and emotional distance between them had driven them further and further apart. They were broken, and James didn't have any clue how to repair it. Dylan wanted to know more, but she didn't ask, because if she did, then he'd know she was interested, and she wasn't sure what exactly it was he wanted from her, or she from him. All she knew for sure was that she'd begun to feel differently about Nick. Like when she'd looked over at him on the couch recently, he was laser-focused on the Lakers game, his body jutting slightly right and left with the players. She used to think that was adorable. But since meeting James, she'd feel a small prick of irritation when he did certain things. His quirks had begun to lose some of their charm. Maybe it was the ring. The heavy oversized diamond that sat on her finger had begun to weigh down their relationship as well. Maybe it was because she knew now that all this was going to be permanent. The way Nick crunched his tortilla chips. The divide between her and her parents since she'd announced the engagement. The way he subtly tried to change her from the person she was to the one he thought she should be. More orderly. She was a self-proclaimed slob. More driven. She still felt a little lost. Just more everything. Nick was incredibly decisive. It was actually one of the things she used to find refreshing. All of the other men she dated seemed a bit aimless, not unlike Dylan. But Nick had known what he wanted from the beginning. He'd wanted Dylan. And Dylan used to think she wanted a man like Nick. Until she met James. He changed everything. She liked that he was older, more experienced, more worldly than Nick. And when they finally spoke on the phone, he made her laugh in a way that Nick never had. A laugh that would shake her whole body. A laugh that she would feel deep down in her gut. She quickly realized he could teach her things. Show her things. Challenge her. They'd quickly graduated from emailing to texting, and soon were in constant communication. Dylan's dull life suddenly sparkled when she shared with James the bits and pieces of it. She became addicted to their banter, which had become more and more flirtatious. So when he asked her to meet him for a drink, she knew exactly what she was doing. As she pulled on her favorite tank top and skinny jeans, she understood. Once she crossed this line, her life would never be the same. She couldn't wait. They'd met at a bar in Costa Mesa. Dylan sipped tonics with lime, and James drank draft beers. They'd thrown darts and competed on the classic pinball machine in back that had flashing lights and a little Ferris wheel that would scoop up the metal ball each time Dylan used the right flipper to send it flying. Dylan teased James that he was so old, he probably played it as a kid. He had. She'd brushed up against him, timidly at first. But as the night wore on, she became bolder. She was rewarded with his hand circling her waist, rubbing her back. And then finally he pulled her in close for that first kiss. And Dylan arched her toes and tilted her neck so her mouth could easily find his. Dylan would play that moment back in her mind so often that she worried she might be obsessed, like that stalker woman in the Lifetime movie she'd watched. It was hard to explain. And she had no one to explain it to anyway, since no one else knew. But she'd never experienced a kiss like that, both soft and hard at the same time, both right and wrong. It made her both incredibly happy and horribly confused. The only thing she knew for sure was that she'd do anything to feel that way again. Dylan had made the short walk down to the pools after she parked the Jeep. She found James as he was coming out of the water, still smiling so wide the corners of his mouth practically touched his eyes.
"You have no idea. The adrenaline rush from that jump was insane. And then I floated in the water for a while. The temperature is perfect."
She'd laid out a picnic on top of two towels she'd snagged from the hotel, and he sat down beside her and popped a piece of salami in his mouth.
"I really wish you'd try it, too."
Dylan glanced up at the bridge and held her breath as another person flew over the edge, this time a middle-aged bearded man, his belly jiggling as he jumped.
"No thanks," she said, and smiled. "I'm good just watching. That makes me nervous enough."
"You worry too much," James said.
"Maybe," Dylan agreed, thinking that James used to worry more too, but now he didn't seem to care.
She used to be proud that she brought out that side of him. She'd feel a slice of satisfaction that she'd prevailed where Jacqueline had failed. But apparently now she was the one holding him back. Maybe the baby would change things.
"You ready to go?"
James asked a short while later, after they'd finished the wine. Dylan had sipped lightly, wanting to please James. He'd fed her a piece of banana bread and then drew her to him, leaning her back and kissing her, causing the couple walking by to let out a low whistle. Maybe she'd imagined the shift in his demeanor. She'd pressed him several times to tell her what was on his mind, but he kept brushing her off, telling her it was nothing, seeming annoyed after the third request. That when he'd said that by talk, he hadn't meant about anything serious. But there was something in his eyes that made her question his words. Had he planned to tell her something important and changed his mind? Finally, she gave up and accepted his answer as the truth. That there wasn't anything to talk about, even though there were so many things to talk about. But how could she press him to reveal his secrets when she was keeping her own? James stood up and held out his hand for Dylan to take. They packed up the remains of their picnic and walked to the Jeep.
"Damn it," James said. "The Jeep was broken into."
"Oh, shit. My purse was in here."
Dylan looked inside, hoping somehow it was still there, but it wasn't.
"Are you sure you didn't take it with you when you set up the picnic? Or into the bathroom?"
Dylan thought hard. She'd been pretty sure she'd left it in the back seat on the floor, underneath a shopping bag. She had thought locking the Jeep would be enough.
"I'm almost positive. What about your wallet?"
"I shoved it under my seat before I got out at the bridge," James said, reaching with his hand and retrieving it. "It's still here."
Dylan's stomach began to hurt. How was she going to get home? She'd have to call her roommates and have one of them overnight her passport. But still, they were supposed to fly back tomorrow. Dylan would need to change her flight, too. Would James stay with her? And then her mind flashed to the pregnancy test sitting at the bottom of the bag.
"Come on," James called out as he headed back toward the pools. "Let's retrace our steps and ask if anyone saw anything. Then we can call the police."
Dylan's head was throbbing an hour later,
They'd finally given up and called the police, filing a report over the phone. The officer who answered told Dylan it was quite common for that to happen, making her feel even more stupid. The police said they'd call if it turned up, but gave her no confidence that it would. James took her hand as they climbed into the car.
"Don't worry, Bayessa. It's just stuff. It can be replaced."
He'd initially been irritated with her as they searched, but as she became upset when they couldn't find any trace of her purse, he'd softened, using her special name. She loved when he called her that. Dylan was exhausted, and that feeling in her gut had not dissipated. She still felt like something wasn't quite right.
"Can we head back to the hotel now?"
"Can we keep going? Finish the drive? We're so close to the best part of the trip. Just lie back and close your eyes. Stop being so afraid. Let the curves soothe you."
James leaned in and kissed her lips gently.
"For me, I really want to see what all the fuss is about with the back road."
Dylan pointed toward the lowering sun.
"But isn't it safer to drive during the day? It's going to get dark soon."
James kissed her again, this time more forcefully.
"Do you trust me?"
Dylan met his gaze. For the past several months, they'd led a life that no one else knew about. They'd risked everything to be together. And now she was pregnant with his baby.
Did she trust him?
The truth was, she absolutely did. She just wasn't sure that she should.
"Yes," Dylan said.
"Remember on the way here, how we could smell the hibiscus and African tulips as we drove? How vibrant green the kukui trees were?"
Dylan nodded, recalling how he'd carefully studied the flora guide inside the case for the Road to Hana CD they'd purchased, then pointed out the trees and flowers along the way.
"Well, this is going to far surpass any of that."
Dylan bit her lip. She didn't want to go, but she wanted James to be happy. She wanted to be his number one, because sometimes, just beyond those beautiful eyes, she could see him thinking about his other life, about his wife. So she was going to continue on this road with him and help him forget. And she was also going to tell him about their baby. Chapter 33, Jax, After. When Officer Kealoha drops us off at the restaurant, our nerves as frayed as our hair from the strong wind, I'm not sure what we'll find. Will the Jeep be here? Did Nick drive back to the hotel or back to California? I try to ignore the hammering in my chest. My earlier anger toward him has subsided. My well of emotions has run dry. Reliving James's last moments was necessary, but excruciating and exhausting. Finally, all the questions that could have been answered were. The challenge is not letting the ones that couldn't be haunt me. But Nick is here, waiting at the bar where we left him, nursing a beer, staring into his glass like if he looked inside of it long enough, he'd find what he's looking for. My heart leaps a little. He didn't leave. He didn't leave me.
"Hey," he says, his lips forming a slow smile.
He doesn't ask how it was. I don't offer any details. He doesn't need to. I don't have to. Because when he stands up and I reach him, I sink into his arms. And I know he can feel that I am emotionally lighter. That I've left a part of me back there on that cliff. I dig my head into his shoulder and close my eyes, and we stay like that for what feels like an hour, but I'm sure is only a few seconds. Listening to each other without saying a word. Forgiving each other for our weaknesses. I can't make eye contact with Beth. I know what I'll see if I do. That look. The ride back to the Westin is quiet. Beth finally giving in to her exhaustion once we reached Paya, snoring softly in the back seat.
"She's a good sister," Nick whispers.
"The best," I concur.
Beth hugs me so hard the next morning that I have to fight to take a breath, and I gently wriggle from her grasp.
"Are you sure you're okay?" she asks me again, easily the 50th time since we returned from Hana last night. I still have time to change my flight so we can fly home together.
She looks at the cab that's waiting for her.
"I swear, Beth, I'm fine. Besides, I have Nick."
Beth gives me a look I can't quite place. If I had to guess, it's a cross between hope that I will recover and find happiness again, and fear that I won't.
"But be careful," is all she says.
I nod, even though that's something I shouldn't be promising her. Because I figured out a funny little secret about life. Even if you stay on the sidewalks and pay your bills on time and use hand sanitizer, bad things still happen. Yes, maybe you can cut your odds by playing it safe, by attempting to predict each and every possible pitfall. But your fate will still find you, no matter how much you hide from it. And now, just 24 hours, but what feels like a month later, Nick and I are at the airport getting ready to fly back to an uncertain reality. The only certainty that I've learned is something about myself. I'm not the same person I was when I left California a week ago. The person who boarded that flight from LAX to Maui was weak. She was scared. Now I feel strong. Not quite indestructible, but much more durable. Like I used to be that crappy paper towel they show in the commercial, and now I'm the 5-ply one. I used to break easily when there was a spill. Now I can mop up almost any mess. Pour that shit on me. I can handle it. I drop my driver's license as we're making our way through security. It's raining again, the sheets of water hitting the concrete and making everything slick inside the open building that houses the Maui airport. "Would it kill them to put some doors on this place?" I had joked to Nick earlier as we stood in the long line to give the airline our bags.
"Here."
Nick picks my license up off the ground and sticks it in the side pocket of my purse.
"You don't want to lose this."
I smile at Nick and feel a memory flash through the back of my mind, one that I can't quite grasp. I pause, trying to reach out and grab the thought.
"What is it?"
Nick asks. I run through a mental checklist. Wallet, phone, toothbrush. I haven't forgotten anything.
"I just got a weird feeling for a second that something wasn't right, but it's nothing."
I shake my head and put my canvas bag inside the white plastic bin on the conveyor belt, mentally rolling my eyes at the word stitched in black thread on the side of the tote. Paradise. I think of Beth, who bought it for me years ago as a birthday gift, telling me that even if I wasn't traveling, carrying it would make me feel like I was on vacation. And I think of the irony now that I'm in paradise, but not on vacation at all. Once we settled into our seats on the plane, I pulled out the tabloid magazine I'd bought at the airport and start leafing through it. It's time to get back to reality, and the first step is seeing what those Kardashians have been up to while I've been mourning. I look up to see Nick watching me, his face pensive.
"I'm sorry," he says.
"For what?" I ask, even though I know what for. But the thing is, I'm not sure he has anything to be apologetic about. If I'm being completely honest, as I'd stood on that cliff without him, just me, my sister several feet off to my right, I was happy I was doing it by myself. Because now I know I can.
"For bailing on you yesterday. My meltdown after we kissed, I was terrible."
I rested my hand on his arm.
"No, you weren't. You were human, and that's okay." "I need you to understand something.
I've touched on this with you, but I haven't really gotten into it. Because it's hard to explain to someone who doesn't do what I do. But I see things at work. Terrible things. And to survive, you have to develop a shell. That's the only way you can go on a call where a 6-month-old baby has been horribly burned by his crackhead mother and then come back to the station and not fall apart. Because the bells are going to sound again an hour later, and you have to pull on your turnout pants and get back out there. People need me, Jax. I can't afford to fall apart. And I couldn't see where Dylan died. Because my mind would have clicked together all the parts that were missing from the accident report. I've been the first responder on calls exactly like that one. I know how she died. And I didn't want to see it. And I'm sorry I didn't figure it out sooner, that I wasn't smart enough to realize that was going to happen to me. I'm sorry I decided to put it in the box. He pointed at his chest, and I think I know what he means, but I wait for him to tell me. It's where I put all the horrible things I don't want to deal with. I understand, I say. And I really do. Because I have a box, too. It's where I put the endometriosis. It's where I filed James's temper. It's where I put James's death. Until I realized that in order to be free of it all, I had to take the lid off and let it all out. And I hope Nick will be able to do that one day, too. Nick stares out the window as we taxi down the runway. I was afraid if I didn't put Dylan and her accident in that box, the whole thing might come apart. You'd lose control, I say. And he nods and wraps his hand in mine. His fingers are warm and comforting. When he turns back, tear streaks stain his face. God, Jax, I feel like you are the only person in this entire world who gets me right now. I feel the same way, I say, and hold my breath as he cups my chin and kisses me so softly, so gently that I almost melt into the seat, his salty tears escaping into my mouth. I don't want to fight this anymore, he says. I don't want to either. You don't have to be afraid of hurting me. I would never, ever hurt you. You know that, right? I do, I whisper, and lean in to kiss him again before resting my head on his shoulder as the plane begins to ascend into the cloudless sky, both of us returning to a new life. Chapter 34. Jax. After. Okay, I'm ready. I point toward the cardboard box in the corner of the bedroom, the one Beth and I have been actively avoiding without discussion for the better part of 2 hours as she's helped me pack up James's things. The word special is scrawled across the top in thick black Sharpie. I remember writing it like it was yesterday. James and I were moving from our tiny, overpriced apartment in Newport Beach into this house that we'd been able to buy with his mom's help, what was going to be our starter home, but eventually became just home. At that time, we hadn't accumulated a lot to put inside of the box, but I told James that we would as we created more special memories. I was planning to write that, special memories, but he grabbed me by the waist and threw me on our mattress, the last thing still in our otherwise empty bedroom, before I could get to the second word. He laughed as he looked down at me.
I want your special box, he said suggestively as he undid the snap of my jeans, his bright green eyes boring into mine. As he yanked my pants down, he breathed that he wasn't going to use a condom, that he wanted to start trying. My gut had clenched for a split second, but I pushed the guilt away. There was still a chance. I could get pregnant from today's quick, condomless sex, so I let my hope be stronger than my fear. My sister slides the box across the hardwood floor, and I think I can read her mind. By the way her lips are pressed together, she's probably thinking,
What will happen to Jax when she opens it? Everything inside is a fragment of my relationship with James, a moment in time we didn't want to forget. They're the items that made us and us. I want to do this. I respond to the question in her eyes. Whether this is true, I can't be sure. But I think it's what we both need to hear. And the fact that I was able to clean out his desk drawers without becoming hysterical, I took as a positive sign. I'm accepting. I'm understanding. I'm adjusting. He isn't coming back. But guess what? The old Jax isn't coming back either. I've been home from Maui for 3 months, but I put this off until today. I knew there would be a day when I'd feel ready to go through James's things, and I let my heart choose when that would be. I woke up this morning at Nick's condo, his arms wrapped tightly around me. We've been sleeping like that, spooning, my back pressed up against his chest, sometimes even holding hands, like we haven't wanted our bond to sever. And as I lay in his arms, his breath hot on the back of my neck, I knew it was time. That I needed to call Beth, get some boxes, and begin. To ensure I didn't back out, I even texted James's mom to let her know she could come by at the end of the day to pick up what she wanted to keep. I'm literally right here if you need me, Beth says, as I pick at the edges of the packing tape. I smile at her, thinking back to my conversation with Nick this morning, when I told him what I planned to do. His entire body instantly relaxed, as if the words had literally traveled through him. He had admitted early on that he wasn't comfortable here at my house, so he never stayed overnight. He'd said James's things, the framed college diploma in the den, his jacket still hanging in the front closet, his jeans and t-shirt still neatly folded in the laundry room, had always made him feel as if James's ghost were watching us. I tried not to take it personally, to understand how the very things that made me feel comfortable made him feel the opposite. And there was something about his point of view that had helped me realize that having James's aftershave in the medicine cabinet wasn't helping me let go. I'm not trying to erase James. I'm trying to find myself, and to move forward with someone else. The morning after Nick and I returned home from Maui, Beth was on my doorstep with coffee. I knew it was her excuse to come over early so she could grill me about Nick. I told her I had developed feelings for him, because there was no other way to describe it. Was it more than that? Less? My body and heart said one thing, yes, 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 and my mind chanted another, be careful. Beth warned me to take it slow, and I blushed before admitting it was too late for that. We'd already made love for the first time the night before. She shook her head at me. I hope this isn't a rebound. You're both definitely due for one. Her words had stung, but I wasn't ignorant. I knew there was truth to them. But rebound or not, the way I feel about Nick is difficult to explain with words. It's more of a feeling, like maybe he's the silver lining in the dark cloud that's been hanging over me. Nick and I have been moving at a pace that both scares and exhilarates me. I've decided if I've learned one lesson in all of this, it's that life can be frighteningly short, so you might as well live it. My phone vibrates, a text from Nick telling me he misses me. I scroll up. He sent 3 since this morning. I can't help but smile. I turn my phone on silent so I can focus, and I stare at the box again. I don't have to pull back the cardboard sleeves to know what I'm going to find inside the special box. I can already feel the lace of my garter that I wore on my thigh under my wedding dress, my something new that Beth purchased at a sex shop. It's hideous, red and black with silver fringe. Her intention, to remind me even vixens could wear white. I can see the pale blue photo album filled with snapshots of our history,
the way we used to do it before those websites started creating them for us. I'm going to see pictures of James celebrating his 29th birthday, a shot glass filled with whiskey raised up high, me snuggled into the crook of his arm. I'm going to remember Beth's beautiful vow renewal at the Hotel Del Coronado, how she'd famously cried happy tears as she walked down the aisle, her sassy short white satin dress flapping in the wind. And when I dig deeper to the bottom, I'm going to touch the heart-shaped tin, the one that holds our letters to each other, the words we wrote when we were still so in love, the poem from our second anniversary, the proof that he loved me, that I loved him, that we were a we, the words that will continue to live on after him. I watch Beth as she takes James's sport coat off the hanger and folds it neatly. She sacks it in the box marked with his mother's name. Isabella had texted me back with a list of what she wants, and I'm also putting additional things in that I know she'll cherish. I check my phone. It's nearly 4 p.m., and she'll be here soon. I decide I need to rip the tape like I would a Band-Aid, and I find our wedding album sitting on top. "Will you put this in Isabella's box?" I hand it to Beth without opening it.
"Are you sure?"
I nod as a tear falls down my cheek. She planned the whole thing anyway, and he looked so handsome that day, she'll love having it. I sift through the box, taking deep breaths as I contemplate what to keep. I don't want to lose too much of James, but I don't want to lose myself either. It's a fine line. I dig toward the bottom, my fingers feeling for the tin. I start tossing everything out, an envelope full of movie ticket stubs, a foam finger from our first Dodgers game, a program from The Lion King. The tears start to fall harder now. The dam has been broken. "What is it? What's happening?" Beth crouches down beside me as I sob.
"It's not here."
"What?"
"Our letters. Our words. His words."
"Are you sure? Let me look." She leans over the box.
"I already did. It's not there, Beth."
Beth searches for a moment and shakes her head.
"I'm sorry, I don't see it either, but I'm sure it will turn up. Maybe you moved it. Remember what a haze you were in after everything happened? It is possible you took it out and didn't put it back."
I don't remember taking it out. But Beth is right. The weeks after James's death were surreal, and many of my memories of that time are cloudy. Unfortunately, save for the pictures Beth boxed up right after James died, and my favorite sweatshirt of his. This tin is the only thing I believe I can't live without. Beth hugs me, and I cry until I can't anymore, amazed by how many tears I have inside me, that I keep believing they will eventually dry up.
"This sucks," I say into her shoulder.
"I know." Beth squeezes me. The doorbell rings. I pull away and wipe my face with the sleeve of my sweater.
"Shit, that must be Isabella. How do I look?"
I say as I stand up.
"Like you've been bawling for hours," Beth says gently.
"It's fine. She's seen me looking even worse than this, I'm sure." But I wipe under my eyes and run a finger through my hair anyway. I walk to the door, my heartbeat speeding up slightly. I haven't seen her since the memorial. Isabella had been somewhat stoic, thanks to the two Xanax I saw her sister slip her that morning. I suck in a long breath and open the door. Nick grins and pulls a bouquet of red roses from behind his back.
"What are you doing here?"
I ask, surprised to see him. He told me he was going to a new beer tasting room in Long Beach.
"Well, hello to you too."
"Sorry, I just thought..."
I start, then stop.
"These for me?"
"No, they're for Beth."
He smiles, and I feel my chest warm.
"Thank you,"
I say, and cover his mouth with mine,
trying to forget about the heart-shaped tin.
Jax?
I jerk back from Nick and drop the roses at the sound of my mother-in-law's voice. I had planned to tell Isabella everything, eventually. But each time I thought about calling her and asking her to coffee, I'd imagine her face as I destroyed the version of her son that she'd thought she'd known. It's the same reason my mother still believes James had been in Maui for work. I know how it feels to question every memory you have of someone you love. I just wasn't ready to do it to someone else. And now I'm forced to face Isabella, my heart banging inside my chest, a flush coloring my cheeks. I feel caught, even though technically I've done nothing wrong. But still, her eyes are full of questions I'm not sure I can answer, at least not with explanations she'll want to hear. I meet Nick's gaze briefly, and I can't quite read his expression. If I didn't know better, I'd almost think he were enjoying this. The drama. I force myself to make eye contact with Isabella, who's standing there in her loose-fitting floral blouse and capri pants, a large tote slung over her shoulder. She looks out of place, like she meant to arrive at a farmer's market. And maybe it's that simple, that she no longer fits in here, into my life.
Nick, this is my mother-in-law, Isabella. Isabella, this is...
I pause, not sure I can say the word. Not 100% sure what that word is.
I'm Nick, her boyfriend.
Nick extends his hand, but Isabella steps back abruptly as if he had a disease she didn't want to catch.
Boyfriend. It sounds so juvenile. But then again, what else is he?
For a brief moment, I see James leaning against the counter in my tiny kitchen, wearing nothing but a pair of crisp white boxers. It's just 2 weeks after I'd met him, and he's grinning at me. And then I'm laughing and kissing him like I might never stop, because he's just asked me not to sleep with anyone else ever again. Because we're officially going steady. I'm your boyfriend now. I give Nick a look, wishing he'd have let me handle it. And he mouths to me that he's sorry. The three of us stand there in awkward silence, somehow all understanding it will be Isabella who speaks next.
Jacqueline, please tell me this man is not really your boyfriend, that you haven't moved on so soon.
Isabella says shrilly, her brilliant green eyes squinting just like James's when he was angry. When I don't answer, her face registers understanding. He is exactly who he says he is. She shakes her head, as if trying to toss away the information. She opens her mouth to say something, but quickly closes it. She stares at the ground, deep in thought. Finally, she looks up at me.
"Where are his things?" she asks. "I want them right now, and then I will leave," she says. Every word slow and measured.
I move to the side so she can get into the house. Beth appears and gives me a questioning look as Isabella brushes past her toward the master bedroom.
Can you go? I need to talk to Isabella alone, and tell Nick he needs to go home too, that I'll talk to him later, please,
I whisper to Beth as I pass her. I find Isabella sobbing in our closet, breathing in James's gray cashmere sweater. I start crying at the sight of her, at the grief I know she must feel but that I will never understand. The loss of a child.
I'm so sorry, Isabella. I was going to tell you everything. I just...
You just what? Isabella cuts me off.
Forgot to tell me you'd moved on?
No, it's not that. If I told you... Then I'd need to explain who Nick is, how I met him, and that would hurt you.
More than I'm hurt right now?
She continues to cry as she cradles his sweater.
No, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'm so sorry.
I choke through my tears.
It's bad enough you never gave me a grandchild. How could you? Did you even love him?
Yes, I loved him more than anything.
but I'm not sure that was enough. The words bubble up inside of me, but I don't speak. I didn't want it to be like this. I had imagined this conversation going very differently, and certainly not starting off with her witnessing me kissing Nick. But no matter how it started, it's time to tell her. Not to defend that I've begun to have some good days where James doesn't infiltrate my thoughts, but because she deserves to know the truth about how her son died. Isabella, I think you should come sit down. There are things you need to know. What could I possibly still need to know? After I've seen my son's widow making out with some guy in a motorcycle jacket just 6 months after his death. James wasn't who I thought he was. Isabella frowns. What are you saying? Don't you dare slander him just so you can feel better about what you're doing here. My son loved you. No matter what I said, he always defended the things you did, she says, her voice rising. James gave you everything, and you... I put my hand on her arm to interrupt her. I don't know how else to say this, so I'll be blunt. James was having an affair. That's why he was in Maui. He'd been seeing her for months. And she was pregnant with his child. Yes, you're right. He may have loved me, but I think he loved her too. Isabella lets out a cry, and I put my arms around her shoulders and hug her as tightly as I can. We stand like that for several seconds until Isabella pulls back, her mascara running down her cheeks. You're sure? Yes. I promise I'll explain everything. She walks over to her tote and pulls out a package of tissues, removing one and dabbing each eye delicately. I'm ready now. I sit down on the bed and pat the place next to me. Okay, I say. And because there's no room for lies in this version of my life, I start from the beginning and don't stop until every drop of truth is revealed. Chapter 35. Jax. After. Nick's front door opens just as I'm about to turn the knob. Hey, he says, a huge smile spreading across his face. I didn't think I'd see you tonight. I was just heading out for ice cream. Ice cream? I cock my head. Yeah, you got a problem with that? He smirks. I was stressed about your conversation with Isabella and thought I'd eat my feelings. He laughs. I smile. That's why I'm here. I wanted to talk to you about what happened at the house earlier today. It was pretty awkward. I know. He grabs my hand. I'm sorry about the whole boyfriend thing. I totally overstepped, he says, and looks down at his cowboy boots. It's just that, Jax, I think I'm falling in love with you. Suddenly, I forget what had seemed so important as I'd driven to his house. The questions I had for him about how he acted. All I can think of is what Nick just revealed. Involuntarily, I flash back to when James whispered that he loved me for the first time in my ear right before we fell asleep in his bed, his breath tickling my ear. I push the memory aside and let Nick's declaration sink in, let his words settle in my chest. Thankfully, he keeps talking. And I know this is selfish, but I wanted her to know it. He looks back up. I wanted you to know it. His gaze is so intense, it feels like he's looking through me. The truth is, I've been falling too. I can tell by the way I rush to text Nick when something funny happens, like last week when I'd been in Starbucks and discovered a sock stuck to the back of my pant leg, the dryer sheet failing to do its job. I know by how my stomach flutters when his name comes up on my phone, and he's calling me sometimes 4 or 5 times a day, just to hear my voice. I was sure of it when I couldn't sleep at night, and I'd think of him first, wishing he were beside me to wrap his strong arms around my waist. It's been a long time. But my heart still remembers the feeling of the first gasps of love. I tilt my chin up and kiss him, deciding not to be scared. For the record, I'm falling in love with you too, I whisper, the words feeling foreign as I say them out loud. James was the only man I ever loved until now. But James was the past. Nick is the future. Nick pulls me in for a deeper kiss. I lose my balance, and he catches me before I stumble, causing the moment to pass. And I'm grateful because I don't want to have the conversation, to dissect what it all means. Come on, let's go eat the shit out of our feelings, I say as I laugh awkwardly. I could go for some mint chip. And let me guess, you're a rocky road kind of guy.
Nope.
He shakes his head, a smile playing on his lips. Chunky monkey?
Try again.
He closes the door and rattles the knob to make sure it's locked. Pistachio. I frown, and he gives me a blank stare.
What? I ask. Pistachio. Really?
Fine, I give up.
Vanilla, he says proudly.
Vanilla? I squint at him. I would have never guessed that. It's so
boring,
he says, taking my hand.
Maybe a little, I say. I like that it's predictable, easy, never disappoints.
I laugh. Kind of like you?
Maybe,
he says before kissing me, his lips soft. As we're pushing through the front doors to go outside, Nick's arm slung over my shoulder. A woman with wiry short blonde hair and cut-off jean shorts nearly collides with us.
Sorry, she says, looking up from her phone and glancing from me to Nick, her eyes widening at him.
No problem, I say, and she gives me a once-over, then hurries toward the elevator, her barely there shorts rising up in the back with each stride, her pumps clicking against the floor.
Did you see the way she looked at us? I ask once we're out on the sidewalk. Do you know her?
Nick nods. She was one of Dylan's roommates. They never got along very well. He frowns.
I haven't seen her in months.
After we order our ice cream cones and settle on a bench outside Baskin-Robbins, I recount my conversation with Isabella to Nick. He said he wanted to know how it went, and I decided that if we're going to have a real relationship, I need to share. But still, it feels weird. Talking about my ex-mother-in-law with my new boyfriend. In between licks of my mint chip, I tell him how she fired question after question, some curious, some accusatory, and how I tried my best to hold my voice steady as I revealed the ugly truth about James, about me, about our marriage. At first it seemed that she held me somewhat accountable for James's indiscretion, and I didn't argue the point. I had accepted that I wasn't an innocent party in our union. I hadn't cheated, but I'd betrayed him in my own way. But as I told her about my journey to Hana, how Nick had helped me find a bit of closure to fill the gaping hole James's death had created inside me, she began to soften. She left 2 hours later. Her tears had finally dried up and were replaced by forced acceptance. I'm sorry he did this to you, she said as she stood and grabbed her things. I always prided myself on my close relationship with my son. I wish he had trusted me enough to come to me. Obviously, I didn't know him as well as I should have. We all have secrets, I said as we walked to the door. Some are just bigger than others.
True, she pondered.
I have one more question.
Anything.
How do I move on from this? Because it's not like I can call and yell at him for being so irresponsible, for being so selfish. I feel like I have nowhere to place all this anger I'm feeling.
She gave me a sad smile. If I'm being totally honest, I had really wanted to direct it your way.
But it's not as simple as that, is it?
No, it's not.
So then, what?
I thought for a moment before speaking. I think you let yourself love him just the same. He was your son, and he loved you. That will never change. And you? Do you still love him after all this? I thought back to standing on the cliff in Hana, the closest to James that I'd ever be again. In that moment, I'd felt no anger, no resentment, only love tinged with regret. I nodded. The next part I don't tell Nick, knowing it would bother him. I will always love him, Isabella. But I'm also ready to move on. I hope you can understand that. I can, she said softly. You know, I was wrong about you, Jax. You're much stronger than I ever gave you credit for. I laughed lightly. I think we may have both been wrong about each other. Isabella hugged me one last time. Take care of yourself, she said, grabbing the box of James's things I'd put aside from her, the wedding album sticking out of the top, and walked out my front door without looking back. Nick kisses my forehead lightly after I finish telling him the story. I know that conversation wasn't easy, but for what it's worth, I'm proud of you. I think you did the right thing by telling her the real story. She deserves to know. The truth will set us free, right? I whisper as I rest my head on his chest, his steady heartbeat comforting me. The next morning, the pressure of Nick's lips on my mouth prods me awake. He moves in for a deep kiss that sends a shiver through my entire body. See you later, sleepyhead. Can you stay a bit longer? I pat the bed next to me. Maybe do what we never got around to because I passed out. Sorry about that. I wish I could. He tugs at the bottom of the t-shirt he loaned me last night and raises his eyebrow. But I've got to get to the station. The guys texted that it was a rough night, so I want to get there a bit early and relieve them. I smile as I watch concern fill his eyes. I love how much you love your job, I say, thinking about my classroom that I just returned to last week. How good it felt to take in each and every one of my new fourth graders' faces, to sit in the chair behind my desk and watch them as they read their textbooks, to let myself get excited about a field trip we were taking to the Discovery Museum. The school had offered to extend my leave of absence, but I needed to get back to teaching. It was what reminded me I was still me. Nick kisses me again. Stay as long as you want, okay? It's Sunday. Enjoy yourself. I set the espresso maker out for you. I know what a beast you are without your caffeine. I'm not that bad, says you. He laughs when I swipe at him, and I watch him walk out of the room. A few hours later, as I'm leaving, I see the woman from the night before hovering in the hallway outside of Nick's front door. She flashes me a surprised look, then rushes away. But she abruptly stops and turns her body halfway around, as if she doesn't know which way she's going. "Did you need something?" I ask. "Nick's not here. I know. I saw him leave earlier." She stares down at her cherry red wedge sandals, then looks back up. "I was coming to see you, actually," she says as she takes a few tentative steps in my direction. "Me?" She rolls her eyes. I think about the strange look she gave Nick last night, how she sized me up. "I know you must be upset about seeing Nick with someone so soon after Dylan." I pause, remembering the conversation I had with Isabella, how hard it was for her to see I'd already moved on. "But it's complicated." She crosses her arms. "Listen," I stop, realizing I don't know her name. "Brianna," she says. "Look, Brianna, I get it. You're upset about Dylan. My husband died too. They were in Maui together, having an affair. I'm not sure if you realize that, but that's how Nick and I met. We were both devastated to discover the people we loved weren't who we thought." "You don't know what the hell you're talking about." Her harsh tone stuns me.
We stand there for a few moments, neither of us breaking eye contact. And finally, I speak. Where do you get off coming here?